We are live on the air, and we have Stephen Bupp. And
hey.
We've actually talked to you before because you're in the band section with the Roller Coasters, but now you've got a solo project.
That's me.
Yeah, and we're just going to get a couple things out of the way because now that we do this video podcast, we are starting to get sponsors, and you might see up here on a corner our sponsor, but we're going to actually put up something so you can actually see it a little bit bigger. The sponsor is called Double Jack Online. They're out of Germany. If you take your cell phone and scan that, they do philanthropic lotteries. So you're going to go and play Keno. You can play Powerball, and then a percentage of profit goes to charity. And so you can check that out. We'll put up the banner for a second so people can see that. So you can either scan that with your phone or use the link we have down here. And now we'll just have that for a couple more seconds because they are the sponsor. And then we'll get into the interview. We're going to talk about the chiptune album from Stephen Bupp. So we'll get this off the air now. and get back our Phantom logo because everybody wants to see Phantom. Yeah, there's the Phantom logo.
For sure.
So, this year's been kind of weird. And, people are starting to figure out different things. And it's cool. I was talking to you and it's like, wow. It's like, I see you out there. I was like, oh, yeah, you're from Sex with Roller Coasters. And now you actually have a very unique project that's totally different than what you did in the band.
Thank you. Yeah. You've known me from Sex with Roller Coasters. I've been in that band for years. I've been playing rock and roll music for years, namely, guitar and just doing like punk rock stuff since I was like a teenager. Unfortunately, we couldn't meet up because of all the things happening. But I want to continue to make music. And I didn't want to just make more rock music because that's what the band's for. I just picked some stuff I thought was cool and just started making weird chiptune video game music.
Well, there's one thing I've always noticed because like the video game industry is kind of competing with like the same fans that used to buy music, right? They're totally engaged with sure. YouTubers, watching Dashy or whatever. They're on there playing, all the games, and gamers are kind of ruling everything. So do you have a love for video games or that kind of chiptune type of sound, or from that kind of old school gaming, or was this an idea for the sound for the music?
This is the second album I've released under my own name. My first album was like straight up music that I made with the Sega Genesis, just because I wanted to do something that that reminded me of like kind of like what I used to do for fun, like growing up. I just the coolest sounds that I had. So when I made this album, An Opera of Knives, I want to continue that, and so I wanted to use a Game Boy, get those real like crunchy 8-bit sounds.
Oh wow! So the first album was the Genesis.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a Genesis. I had a Dreamcast, and I had a Saturn, and I totally was in love with the Saturn. I didn't like it when PlayStation came because I was like, I hated how Sega got kind of wiped out. Because I really thought that the Saturn and the Dreamcast were really good systems and they just didn't get the chance,
Yeah, for sure. I'm not sure what happened there, but
I'm always rooting for the underdogs. So I'm like, sure. I like knights.
Yeah.
Nobody else likes knights. It's like, well, I like it, but that's interesting. So we actually want to have people listen to the title track. So we're going to bring that up so we can do that here.
For sure.
And we're going to bring up the song and we'll put you on mute and we're actually going to play the whole thing. We don't care if we get the strike because we're not about that. But we don't get a strike, but they tell us we can't monetize. But we get money from other things. So we don't care.
Yeah, that's okay.
So what we're going to do is we're going to play Opera Knives. That's the title track for the record. And we're going to give you a good picture of it. And then we're going to talk more about the whole record and the project. So that's cool. We're going to start that now. We'll put you on mute once we start it.
Right on.
Here we go. We'll be right back. The title track at Opera Knives from Stephen Bupp. And let me get back to our main view so everybody can see where we are. So that what's cool about that song is, like I said, it's like it's interesting because I kind of felt like a little bit of a Pink Floyd vibe a little bit from the early Floyd. But then at the end, I kind of heard a little bit of like PIL.
Okay.
The Public Image Limited, you kind of channel a little kind of Johnny Lydon at the end. It kind of reminded me of like a Public Image Limited, like from Metal Box or something.
Sure.
But yeah, it is. Well, you know, people might not know my strange references because I listen to all kinds of weird music. But like Sid Barrett, Pink Floyd. I'm not talking about the big, you know, expansive Pink Floyd.
Sure. Or like
the original Pink Floyd. But So like the whole project is very different than what people would know of you from Sex with Roller Coasters.
For sure.
And you had done a previous album that we had talked about. But this one, again, you maybe talk about the focus and how you put it together and the instrumentation. It's like, because you're the single producer on this whole thing. You're the primary songwriter and producer for this whole project, right?
Sure. Yeah. I did absolutely everything from, you know, arranging and recording, mixing, mastering. I did all that stuff. Most of it, like I said, I really wanted to with this project, my main focus was like, I wanted to expand, but also shrink from the previous album. So I went with the Game Boy. That was my main start. And I'm using something called an LSDJ, which is a program that you can actually flash onto one of these, USB carts. And that has a tracker in here, so it's got like a list of stuff, and you literally put stuff on the list, and it uses the actual Game Boy sounds, which are, you know, you can just put right into your computer, whatever. So I wrote all the songs as sort of like a sketch, using that, and slowly pulled stuff out to use like actual orchestral instrumentation to take those places.
Yeah, it sounds like Mellotrons and stuff like that, you know, but like orchestral pads, like what it could, you could get off of like a D50 or like a JD800 or something. But, you know, I'm going into my synth stuff, head stuff, but but yeah, it's just I like the direction, because I'm a synth head, right? So I'm a total like a hardware synth guy. I'm always like talking about Jupiter 8s and 106s and Moogs and
right.
Prosser 5s and Oberheims. But like, it's cool when I see somebody, you know, you're a guitar player, right?
Primarily, yeah.
Yeah. I always think it's really interesting how a guitar player's approach like synth type music. You know, it goes back to even like Pete Townshend, like his approach to synthesizers. He's known in even organs, like Hammond organs.
Right.
It's like in the synth world, he's like one of the best players.
Sure.
Because the way he came at it is not what Keith Emerson did, right?
Right.
It's not what Stevie Winwood did. It's not what Stevie Wonder did. He came at it from a totally different way. And it's kind of like a very modular way, kind of what people do today. He was doing like with Bob O'Reilly and,
right.
you know, the stuff he did with the ARP 2600 on Relay.
For sure.
And won't get, and Who Are You? So, yeah, it's just interesting to hear your approach with the chiptune, which is kind of, you know, is a very underground kind of thing.
Right.
But the way you did it is just really interesting. Maybe talk more to you.
I never really came to the table as being like a chiptune artist, but you know, obviously I'm using a lot of chiptune hardware and stuff, and that mm-hmm. whole community, like those people are mostly wonderful. They've accepted me and just, you know, are always promoting each other's stuff or promoting my stuff. It's a real cool community. Like I said, I started with the Game Boy, and I'm more of a producer or a songwriter that, like, I hear stuff in my head. I'm not really like a play stuff and let stuff happen type of guy. So yeah, like sometimes, cause like, you know, guitar is my first language. Sometimes I'll have something in my head and I'll have to play it on guitar to know what notes to put into the synth or into the Game Boy or into something else.
Well, yeah. I think that approach sometimes causes things to happen that a keyboard player won't do, right? Because we're taught as a keyboard player, if you're like, you know, I think one of the cool things is when you come from a different instrument and you try something else, like if you get a sax player and he jumps on a guitar.
Sure, yeah.
Right, then it's like he's trying to phrase like his sax.
Right, yeah, he's trying to play saxophone with his fingers.
It's always really cool because I think that could even like synthesizer players, the way we think traditionally is we have to try to get in the head of the instrument we're trying to replicate.
Right. Right.
So if I'm playing a sax, I shouldn't play endlessly because I should be taking breaths.
Right.
Right. If I'm trying to play drums, I should try to think like a drummer and actually listen to drum tracks to try to pick up how a drummer should play.
Absolutely.
If I play a bass, I should try to think about like how a bass player plays. And so like the cool thing about if you're a synthesis, you're trying to like replicate other instruments like all the time. That's what we do.
Right.
But when you come into it, something like a chiptune, it's kind of like a feel, it's like a genre. So did you actually have to consult with anybody to kind of get into it, or you kind of just discovered it on your own?
To actually learn how to utilize the hardware, I watched tons and tons and tons of tutorials and mm-hmm. stuff, because it's not intuitive. You kind of have to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
There is an experimental process to get some of those like cooler sounds. The Game Boy is pretty interesting. It's got four channels. It's got two square wave channels that are just straight 8-bit noises. But then it's got a wave channel, which is like very, very primitive synthesis. So you can actually kind of like change the wave. You can pick saw, you can pick square, sine, and manipulate it that way.
Like a wave table, maybe?
Yeah, it's exactly what it is.
That's interesting. I didn't know that had that.
Yeah. It's just that one channel. You can either, that channel actually has two purposes. You can either utilize it as a wave table, or it can do like very, very small sampling.
Oh, that's cool. Like PCM samples, like it would have been like a D50 or tiny.
They're
minuscule.
Yeah, 4-bit at best, so they're like super distorted, but like I mean that's kind of the charm, right?
Yeah, it's what you're looking for. Like if you're trying to pull 2600 sounds, like super basic, you know,
right? Yeah. it's ultra rudimentary.
Yeah. Once you get into these old game systems, like, oh, I want to try to pull like something from an Intellivision or a ColecoVision.
Yeah.
Showing my age, because I actually grew up with those when there's like I was a kid and I could pick a 2600, a ColecoVision or Intellivision, and you're like, I, everybody, I said 2600 because I look better. but I don't know.
But, yeah. My first system was the Sega Genesis, which is why I started with that, my first album.
That's awesome. I actually was one of those kids that was crazy because we like, you can play Space Invaders at home. Yeah. I was like an arcade kid, and that's right. The, you know, and I mean, I'm a child of the 70s, so I would go to the arcade and be playing Asteroids, and then we hear, oh, you're going to be able to play Asteroids at home. And like, what? And we were like, everybody was like telling their parents, like, that's what I want.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I got that was the first game I ever had. First, you know, games. That's because the one, you know, it's like I said, there was, in television was out there. We were like, what's that? It had got this circle controller. And like,
right, yeah. It's like, real wild.
I don't know what that is. But yeah, this is a really wild song. The way it, you know, you can hear the initial part is very chiptune. And then you bring in this orchestration. And then you have like this, that choir. Can you talk about like, how did you create that choir of voices?
The whole album is just kind of like a mixture of tons and tons and stuff. The vocal effects that I'm doing, especially for like those bigger choir stuff, there's a couple of songs that use it. It's literally like 50 versions of my own voice just layered on top of
layered each other. Layered on top of each other? Oh, kind of like Hendrixian, because the Hendrixians did that, where he just layered like an orchestra of guitars on the studio version of the Star Spangled Banner, which I don't know if everybody's ever heard the studio version. Not the Woodstock version. The studio version, he actually worked with Les Paul and he overdubbed his guitar like 50 times.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's in different keys. And it sounds like, if you've ever heard it, it sounds like Rainbow Bridge.
Wow.
If anybody wants to find it. But everybody knows about the Woodstock version. But what it has in common is what you just said, that you layered your voice and you created this orchestra of your voice, like this choir. Even if you think about if you did that with a guitar with a guy like Hendrix, it sounds like this, like a bunch of like a whole orchestra of Hendrix.
Yeah. So it's mostly my own voice. But to get some of those, like, you know, more rich, like lower male tones or like the higher female stuff, I invested in a vocal synth.
Vocal synth, you ran it through that.
So it's my voice on top, and then in the middle is this vocal synth that plays choir sounds. And you know, you can play the notes with one hand, and on the other hand you can choose vowel sounds.
Oh, cool.
So they're actually like kind of singing what I'm singing, just minus the consonants.
It's kind of like the old Mellotrons used to have like vocal choirs on Mellotrons, where people would like run the tape, the old tape-based Mellotrons.
It's like an ultra-modern version of that. Yeah.
I use, you know, to create Josephine Electric, if anybody knows me, I use a VT3 or a VT4 vocal transformer from Roland, and it does what you just said. I can actually, you know, my voice, when it's Josephine, is pitched to a soprano.
Right, like format change.
Yeah, and it does it in real time. And I usually run a form on it, and I run effects on it. Like, I run, like, a bunch of other things besides that, but it just creates her in real time.
Sure.
And it's always, I've always been very interested in vocoders, even going back to the old Moog 16-channel vocoder that used to be in the 70s. It was like phenomenal. That it's a bear. I think cost like $5,000. But it's just, I'm a big proponent of using it to create characters, like the way you're using it. A lot of people use them to just stay like auto-tune. But when you use them to create the kind of situation you did, I think that's kind of what I think they should be used for.
For sure, yeah.
Because it's more creative than just kind of, you can burn people out if you just use them the way you hear it a lot.
Sure, yeah. Depends on what you're in the mood to listen to.
Yeah. It just becomes like, oh, I heard that how many times? Somebody trying to sing when I know they can't sing.
Yeah.
Not to put down people, but so like this album is this something that you said you did a first album that was more like the Sega Genesis, and this is off of the Game Boy. Are you thinking to continue that with like a different game system
for like that was never really my, I don't really know what's next, to be honest. This album took just about an entire year to make. You know, I really had a strong vision for this one. I knew that I kind of wanted to do that sort of like ultra gothic kind of, like, it's not really church music because it sounds kind of demented, but that, like, you know, big choirs, big
it's kind of got this progressive thing, like if you like early like Peter Gabriel Genesis, early Yes. And I'm a big fan of like progressive rock, you know, listening to like, you know, anything that's kind of in that, mixing fusion and funk and orchestral stuff with, like, you know, hard rock and psychedelic rock. That's like, that's where my headspace is most of the time. That's what the ghost stuff is trying to do.
Sure.
Yeah, so I totally get what you're where you're going, because it's a kind of a hybrid, because you've got this kind of like psychedelic aspect, kind of Beatlesque, you know, orchestral stuff, but then it's strange, kind of like Syd Barrett psychedelia a little bit. It seems to have it. I just pick it up, and then I heard a little Johnny Lydon, like I said, like Pill in it at the end. At least that's what my ear heard. You know, that's my interpretation, but. What I end up at the end of the day is like, that's a cool mixture, you know, because it's different. Like, I can hear influences, but you're doing it with your stamp, you know.
Sure. Yeah. And I don't necessarily know what my own flavor is, but I kind of feel like if you were to listen to my stuff, you could tell that I had my hands in it, regardless of what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's you. It's you, but you can, like, I always like hear influences. Or I like interpret influences, but I do love the reason I talk to independent people like yourself or indie musicians is because of the venture that you are willing to actually do something different, which is why I like to talk to people like yourself, is because there's a lot of stuff out today where everybody wants to go to the same 10 producers and do the same type of thing. Uh-huh. And even like even if you could have been in, you know, just done another replication of what you already do in your band,
that's
which is like the safer thing to do. And business people probably would say, well, why don't you just do that? but you know, it's like, as an artist, you felt like it, maybe explain to the audience, like, for people who know who you, what you do in Sex with Roller Coasters, like, why you chose not to do that.
You know, I've been in Sex with Roller Coasters for years and years and years. We started that band in 2006. So whatever the math is, 15 years, something like that. And you know, we were doing that pop punk, psychedelic punk type stuff. And, you know, obviously tons of other genres mixed in there, 'cause we all love multiple genres. We just love music in general. But that's the music I do with those guys. And I could just do more by myself, and it would probably sound just like a Sex Roller Coasters album, just maybe less, more focused, because obviously I don't have the influence.
Whole band, yeah.
Yeah, because, like, you know, they all...
Pete Townsend versus Pete Townsend solo album versus The Who.
Right.
You can tell it's like a Who type of thing, but it's like, okay, it's like when he just... Like, it's like Behind Blue Eyes. Like, when he does a song that's just his voice,
right,
versus Roger Daltrey doing, like, is typically the voice of The Who.
Right.
But if you have a whole album that's all Pete, then you get, like, a different level. It doesn't have the raw power to Daltrey.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Yeah. So I could just do more than that. But, you know, especially when I wrote that first album, I really wanted to do something. Like I said, I wasn't really trying to do chiptune. I was just trying to write music. I was at a point where, like, I didn't know what to do. So I just picked the sounds that I thought were the coolest. I just thought, you know, like, hey, I grew up playing the Sega Genesis. I love a lot of those early soundtracks from that system. And I'm also a big fan of more modern soundtracks, both with video games and movies and stuff. So I just kind of mixed that. Obviously, you can hear my rock and roll influences, especially on this new album with, like, the drums and stuff.
Yeah, the drums. Yeah, I love
very so, rock and roll.
Are you playing the drums?
Yes. They're drum samples, but I wanted to make sure that all the, like you said, I want to make sure that all of the instruments were real, or at least as real as they could be. So I got an electronic drum kit, and I made sure to play it. So there are samples, but I'm playing
like
it.
Like a Roland kit or any of those other kits. Like nowadays, you can actually have a really good electronic drum kit that actually sounds like a true drum kit.
Yeah, yeah. So there are samples from an actual performance that I just kind of chopped up, put in the drum... the electronic drums.
So you kind of tape spliced them. Well, that's an old kind of progressive technique. I always watch music documentaries, and I was watching Peter Gabriel, like, my, you know, kind of a progressive guy.
Right.
And he had, like, on the Soul album, he had his drummer do like 100 takes of this track, like a 5-minute track. And then he took the tapes and then he said he did like a George Martin thing. He just started cutting them up. He's cut the physical tape up and then spliced it up, just mixed it all up, just randomly mixed it.
He right.
Said, well, yeah, we're just going to, you know, Peter Gabriel's a real progressive like rocker. He's like one of those guys. And he's like, I'm just going to take all this and just mix it all around. And I think that's kind of cool when you take an approach that's kind of like coming out of left field or something. It's like, okay, like we could do something straight, or we could actually take something and then, you know, throw it around. It's kind of famous. I think Wilco did that with Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. They're kind of famous that they went and took like what Jeff Tweedy was doing and then totally like just ripped it up.
Right.
It kind of turned it into inside out. And yeah, because somebody come with an approach, it's like, well, I want to try something different. Yeah, maybe you were looking at the way the soft synths are today or the hardware synths, and you didn't hear what you wanted. So you came up like, well, I like this sound. And you went and found a way to make that sound.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, I had a pretty strong vision for an Opera of Knives. So like I knew exactly what I wanted it to sound like by the time I was ready to record. So I knew I wanted those sort of like bigger sounding rock and roll drums. And, you know, I went out and I bought a sample pack and played it.
That's cool. I mean, it's cool to know when you're a songwriter what your vision is. Like when you get into it, like I have written like rock operas.
Yeah.
Where like I, you know, it's kind of like a Tommy thing. Like, you know, because I'm a big fan of Tommy and Quadrophenia and all those.
That's kind of what I was trying to do with this. Is you know, like each song kind of is like the next chapter of the story.
Yeah, I was going to kind of ask you: is this kind of like a Tommy or Quadrophenia in your mind? Are you trying to make it like that?
Make
it be a rock opera.
Yeah, yeah. So with both albums, I tried to make a story. You know, of course they're super interpretive because I never lyrically, yeah. I'm just not a really specific kind of guy. You're just supposed to kind of feel it and put yourself in that situation. But yeah, you know, I 2020 and 2021 was a tough year for me and for everybody, I imagine. Mm-hmm. And so this is just kind of like a rip out of my diary and just kind of putting.
But it's more of a, it's not like a tightly woven, like Tommy is a very clear story.
That clear. Yeah, yeah. Well, but yeah, but there is a plot and it moves forward.
It's kind of like people like say, well, potentially like Sergeant Pepper's is considered to be potentially a concept album, but there's really no concept, right? There's just a bunch of songs that go together, but you'd be hard pressed to say what is the story, right? But it feels like it's some kind of theme, but you can't pin it down. It's like whatever you feel it is. It's like peace and love or psychedelia or whatever, but it feels yeah. like it's something, but you can't define it. And then later in the 70s, that becomes like the roadmap. Oh, we could take that and actually make it mean like what Pink Floyd right. does. Yeah,
retroactively.
You know, like what you know, the Quadrophenia was or
right.
what Queen ended up doing with A Night at the Opera. I mean, people can say, oh, yeah, I can actually take that kind of idea and actually make it mean something. Or I could keep it psychedelic and like, you know, sometimes with the Yes songs, you're like, it's a theme, but what does it mean?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but, yeah. This yeah. hopefully, because like I said, you know, it's up to the listener. But this one is supposed to be a little bit tighter than that. Mm-hmm. You know, there are characters being. I'm always referring to either you or me, or mm-hmm. there's this third character that I refer to, who's called the Lurker in the Shadows, I refer to him a couple times. And then, you know, I like I said, you know, I love scores, just particularly in video games, but in movies and stuff. And I took mm-hmm. a lot of those ideas while I was like orchestrating this album. I'm using a lot of leitmotifs and reorchestrating them in different songs to kind of like move the plot along. So not only are there like lyrical characters, but they're also like musical characters, I guess, because the music is saying the same phrase in a lot of the songs, if not everyone. Mm-hmm. But it's evolving in key, in tone, and stuff like that.
Yeah, I love that kind of thing, because like a lot of people, you listen to like Genesis, Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, there's a lot of themes in it, but it's kind of like there's like Real, and they're like, oh, like what does that mean? It's like, but you can kind of feel, because Peter was kind of like, I don't want it to be super clear because I want people to kind of interpret it.
Right, exactly.
And so you can either spell it out, like Townsend wants to spell it out because that's his style. So he kind of makes it real clear. Okay, Tommy, I know who Tommy's about, and I can figure it out. But like, it, I think it is more interesting sometimes if you come with, like, I got this lurker. Like, okay, ooh, what does that mean? Because right. Then, like, when you're a novelist, if you create this kind of mystery and you're not so clear, I think it's like when you're doing a movie. Like, if you have a, you know, Hitchcock movie, and one of the best things about it is, like, I can't really figure it out until I get maybe all the way to the end.
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of tried to do that, you know, because the whole album is very, very melodramatic. It's supposed to be huge and whatever. But like right off the bat in song one, I'm introducing you to the main theme within seconds. And then, of course, it devolves into some other song. But yeah, like I said, you know, I could spell out to you exactly my intentions, but I would much rather you interpret it and kind of come up with whatever you think is going on.
I think that's always good, because if you listen to fans, like, they always misinterpret the lyrics from songs.
Yeah, I'm just saying, do that on purpose. No,
it's kind of cool. I think because everybody kind of, to me, I think in terms of sound paintings, right? So when I listen to something, it brings up an image to me. And I think that's like the one thing about when you're a songwriter is, like, you could have like a general theme that you're trying to convey, but how your fans interpret it is their own personal interpretation.
Sure.
And I think it is kind of cool when you leave it, like if you create a music video and you step it out to be exactly what you want that song to mean.
Right.
And you kind of take away that, compared to like if you make it very psychedelic and it really doesn't seem to match, then people can still have their own interpretation.
Right.
But if you turn it into like a really clear storyline, then you took it away from them.
Like I said, I could spell it out. But there aren't really too much vocals in the album. I use them just kind of like an instrument. There's, you know, in the song.
Yeah, it's kind of like jazz. It's kind of like Coltrane. Like
just a little spice of vocals.
I think it's cool because I listen to a band called Sun Ra, a jazz band, right? And they're famous for just doing like lines like space is the place.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're very much like Coltrane, where they'll have lyrics in their jazz and their fusion and their bebop, but it's only a couple lines, and they'll have like a theme, and their famous one is like space is the place, because it's kind of sci-fi bebop.
Sure.
And you're like, and you get this idea that like, what are these cosmic brothers, you know, they're writing this jazz, and it's like, oh, we're going out into space, we're traveling the spaceways, but it doesn't really go into like, okay, what are you doing out there? No, right. It's just like a chant.
You're supposed to feel it. Yeah.
You feel it. And it's kind of cool when you just lose very sparse lyrics like that, that you can kind of put a little bit of a feeling and then leave it open. And then you can still try and direct a little bit of a theme. It's like, okay, we're talking about space.
Yeah.
We're talking about the interstellar ways. And then but then you can kind of fill it in to what you think where we're going.
Yeah. In the first song, like I said, right off the bat, I introduced, you know, the musical themes of the song. And then I got a couple lyrics in there that kind of like pose the question, like, what is this album about? And then, you know, we got a couple more songs. And then if you listen to the last song, the lyrics are the same as they are in the first one, but there's a little bit more to kind of like
a common theme. Yeah. It's kind of like a Love Supreme. Because if you listen to the suite of Love Supreme, like, you'll hear it multiple times it comes in, because that's the theme.
Right.
The same thing with like space is the place. It'll be space is the place, and it'll come in a couple of times, and then I might talk about interstellar ways and other things in the cosmos, but it doesn't really deviate, but it'll come back to a central theme, which is typical jazz, is right. It'll go off and then come back and go off, come back, go up.
Right. But
it's kind of concept stuff, you know, when you get into fusion and bebop, some of it is very conceptual in terms of the thematic use of things. But I think it's cool when you can take those kind of ideas and put them into other genres, which is like, I think that's what the cool thing about this age right now is the ability that, you know, you can mix country, you can mix funk, you can take classical, psychedelic, and EDM, and you know, you could get people who say, well, I don't really want it to be EDM. It's like, but what happens if you mix it with trap? You know, right. What happens if you do, why not? Like, why do you have to have the drop here? Like, why?
Yeah,
why
I mean, you can jump on the train, or you can try to, like, you know, get ahead change, of the curve change, and make your own train, get your own track. Yeah. I like, you know, for an Opera Knives, I wasn't really trying to do anything in particular. I just had an idea, and I was just like, okay, let's throw all the stuff that I can do at it. I wanted an orchestral album. I wanted a chiptune album, but I also wanted it to be a rock opera. So why not? Why not all of those? Well,
I think that's the whole nature of what I call like expansive sound, which is, you know, I associate with like my brand, but I've always tried to tell people like expansive sound doesn't just have to be Phantom.
Sure.
Like, anybody that's like thinking in that terms is like, I think that's where all musicians want to go is to say, you know, you talk to a lot of musicians, they'll say, well, I don't want to get pinned down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm indie rock or I'm alt rock or I'm this and that. So if you say you're expansive, what does that mean? That means we can do anything. You can do everything.
Yeah, that's something I always struggled with. Even you know, with Sex Roller Coasters, we struggle with that. Is that we don't really know what to call ourselves. Like with Sex Roller Coasters, we've settled on pop punk because you know we're really high energy and most things are distorted. But we do a lot of psychedelic stuff. We do a lot of funk stuff. We do a lot of pop.
Yeah, you guys are expansive.
Yeah, and same thing with this. Like, I guess you could call it chiptune because I'm using chiptune hardware, and that's kind of like the lane that I've been advertising in. Which, like I said, the community is wonderful. Gets
you into the kind of marketing world. You kind of got to pin where's the biggest bang for the buck.
Yeah,
you know, your core audience. But yeah, I mean, I think like a progressive synthesis, like a synth wave artist, was like, whoa, I like, because a lot of a synthesis, we like chiptune, you know.
Yeah.
And even though I'm not a chiptune artist, I can respect it.
Sure.
I mean, yeah, there's actually hardware since being built to actually do chiptune.
Right.
And so like in a lot of guys who want, you know, who are synthesis, they want, you know, we don't just want like in our arsenal a mini Moog. Sometimes we're looking for that edge, and like a chiptune like machine is like, oh, that gives me a different angle.
Right.
And not that I would have the whole album that, but I'd like to bring that flavor in. It's like I would think if you're a guitar player, right? I was listening to some guy who was saying, like, when you mix guitars, it's like this orchestra of guitars. Like when you do an album, a lot of times you'll do different tunings, different guitars, different effects, coming from different channels. And synthesis do the same thing. It's like we might have our big Moog bass, but then we'll have a Prophet 5 because it can sit in the mix.
Right.
Or an Oberheim or D50 because what the D50 can do, or a DX7, you know, even going into like, you know, the organs, like Hammond B3s, and just the all kinds of electric pianos. Everything has like a different tone and you want to sit it in the mix.
Sure.
In different ways. Right. So when you hear something like a chiptune, it's like, well, I could take a Moog and have a chiptune come in, or maybe have like a D50, and all these things could have like a layering effect, like in the idea of like a sound painting.
Sure.
You know, so it's like depends on what degree you put what in the mix, you can have this picture and a sound picture that can, you know, convey what you're feeling as the writer.
The cool thing about chiptune is that because it's so rudimentary, you know, like these, especially the older machines, they had to be made affordable for you able to buy and to play, and you want to buy all the games and stuff. So those sound chips are really rudimentary. They're very, very
super basic.
Yeah, and that gives you constraints. That gives you sort of like a small confinement that you have to work in. And I think working with little breeds a ton of creativity because you have to learn like, oh, you know, I want a big drum fill at this part, but I only have four channels to work with. So, you know, maybe now I'm putting the bass on the offbeat because on the downbeat, I need that bass drum sound. And there's not enough channels to make noise.
But it's kind of like the whole point of like some of the old monophonic analog stuff was like, you only could do so much, right? So you had to like, well, how am I going to fit this into the mix? And the limitation is like, what was like, why would you like, you can use all these new synths and have tons of layers of effects and mm-hmm. like 32 LFOs, but you might go and just use a mini Moog, or you might use a mini Korg, which is like only monophonic, maybe only has one LFO, because there's something about that simple sound, just using the square wave or just using the triangle or only having one LFO.
Mm-hmm.
And the limitation of using that sometimes actually can cause you to do things that if you have like all the LFOs in the world and all the mod matrices, that you go maybe too far.
Yeah.
With all these things happening in the sound, and then it's like, then it becomes like, okay, well, I want to get more basic.
Right.
If you go down to the basic roots and get like a very simple synth, you can do really cool wide open demo kind of stuff. I always kind of point out, like, I think about Prince, like in Dirty Mind, it sounds like a demo and it has a lot of appeal because he didn't layer it,
right?
Because he kept it simple,
right?
And there's a lot of Prince music that's like that. There's like, Warner's used to get after him and say, this song ain't finished, and he would like, yeah, it is, because that's what it is.
Yeah,
you know, and it's hard because people were like, well, it doesn't sound finished, but that's the point.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something I struggle with. Like I said, it all started on the Game Boy, but I started putting in those, the drums, the trumpets, the violins, cellos, blah, blah, blah. And I noticed that like the bigger it got, the more like the less appealing it was. So like for this album, I did a ton of like recording and then like carving
stripping bits. Out.
Yeah. So just to get it, you know, I recorded a ton of flute, but it's only ever used in the first song, because I wound up like most of that was just taken up by like violins and stuff, and I just wound up never using it again.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing when you're a musician. Sometimes I like to, like, I'll be like in a session, and I like it, that day I thought this was cool.
Yeah.
But then it's like, okay, I'm stop. Go back 2 days later and then let's do it. Like, nah, I should pull that out.
Yeah.
And I go in, the day I did it, I was like, I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
I can listen to it. It's like, nah, that's not good.
Yeah, because you know, you got a cake and you keep putting frosting on it because you think it's gonna make it better, but eventually, you know, it's too sweet to eat, so you gotta like wipe.
Yeah, sometimes it's just like if you take like just a Moog bass, right, and then some weird like sample. And it's very sparse. And I was just playing with, like, I have this sampler, like a Morphogene sampler. It was like Eurorack sampler. And the cool thing about it is that you can control it with CV.
Mm.
So you can take a sample and then you cut it up by running it through all kinds of subtractive synthesis.
Sure.
And so that in itself can create like a rhythm. And you can use it instead of a drum. And so then I was using, like, okay, I'm going to experiment with using that as the rhythmic track. And then let's do a Moog bass line. Then I went and threw like a bunch of pads on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, came back. And I was like, I don't need these pads. And dropped the pads out and just kept it sparse. And then kind of scattered, wrapped over it. And I said, well, it felt way better without the pads.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes that stuff can be distracting. And you kind of just want to focus on the main element. Or the main ingredient.
Groove, the song. You don't want to bury the groove with all the pads.
And exactly. All
the orchestration. So you kind of like, yeah, it's like, I think as you get more experience as a musician, you start to realize where you can take it away is sometimes better.
Yeah. It's so hard though, because you become attached to all the cool stuff you did. And then you're like, okay, well, that's not beneficial to the track.
Yeah, sometimes I think it is take some maturity to actually cut things.
Yeah, it's
tough. I was like, when I was like 19, I was like I'm not cutting nothing.
Yeah, my baby.
I was like, I'm not cutting anything. Like,
yeah, but then you just wind up with like, you know, the wave files is like a big sausage, and it just sounds like a wall of sound.
There's too much wall. I mean sometimes you want the Phil Spector thing, sometimes you want, you know, you want
for effect, but not like your whole record.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you don't need to have like it sounded like Bruce Springsteen, you know. you don't need that. Sometimes you want the Dirty Mind, you know. Sometimes you want Kiss. If you really think about it, because that is the fact that they put it out is still rare because they did not want to put it out. I read all these like stuff, all this, but I'm a real Prince fanatic, and Warner's really didn't like Kiss. Hmm. They thought it was like not good at all. And they're like, this thing is not ready for prime time. But that kind of shows you, like, yeah, they, like you, if you're an artist, sometimes you got to really stick by your guns.
Yeah.
Because, like, if they haven't heard it, that's a big problem in our industry. Like, there's so much wanting to clone.
Yeah, because that's guaranteed money, and that's what they're trying to do is run a business.
Yeah, but I think it's like as artists, we always have a tendency to kind of, you know, tick off management because, like, we'll go do something, and then they want us to keep on doing, like, Hotel California, like, over and over.
Yeah, and, like, no, I want to do other stuff.
Yeah, yeah. You get your one big hit, and then they want you to just clone that for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And, especially because new stuff keeps happening. That's cool. So, like, you want to take new inspirations. You don't want to just be making music from the 90s for 20 years. You want to make 2020s music in the 2020s.
Yeah, I mean, because I think it's weird because I kind of go back because I have a punk aesthetic in my music. Like, sure, I'm a frustrated guitar player. I'm a synthesis that wants my synth to sound like guitar.
Sure.
and so I try to do that a lot. But you know, I love bands like Husker Du and the Replacements. You know, I listen to like Joy Division and like early New Order, and I like the guitar. Guitar is kind of like in New Wave, I kind of a lot of times I'll focus on what the guitar sounds like in New Wave songs, not the synth, because people always think about New Wave as just all synth, but early New Wave and New Romantic songs have a lot of guitar.
Sure.
You know, a lot of drum, a lot of kind of funky kind of guts to the songs. And that was always interesting to me because the people just, oh, it was just a bunch of pads. It's like, no, you know, there's a lot more than that. So it's interesting as you develop as a musician, just to figure out like what you're going to dive into or try to bring back. Cause you know, sometimes it feels like today in rock, that there needs to be some kind of reinvigoration.
Sure.
Kind of like when Kurt came on the scene, Kurt Cobain. It just seems like we need another kind of like jab in the side. Somebody needs to kind of come and hit the scene.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't know about the radio stations out your way, but out here, a lot of the rock and roll stations are kind of playing like sort of alternative electronic music in its place, like very guitar, drum and bass driven, but like lots of samples, lots of like that sort of just written in that sort of modern loop.
Yeah, sample a lot of mentality. Yeah, it's kind of industrial, kind of heavy, dark wave, kind of like not EDM, but like psytrance. You know, there's a lot of interesting things going on. But I've always been a big fan. Like, you know, the Paul Westerbergs of the world, you know, in bands like, you know, like I said, like Husker Du. And I just love it when somebody can come and be like that, the honesty of that kind of punk.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you hear Grant Hart or Bob Mould just being kind of raw and just saying what they felt.
Sure.
And not doing like love songs, but it's like, you know, really personal type of songs. And there's something about when you can do that, like a Westerberg or a Bob Mould, or even like Joey Ramone, it's like that, there's something about that. You know, even like Deborah Harry, and if you think about Blondie, I mean, there's something, I really get into that kind of songcraft, and I'm kind of missing it, maybe because I grew up from that time period, but I'm like, it's like, where's the next band like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think we're moving upward. But you know, rock and roll will stick around, just like all genres.
We always get surprised because I didn't see Kurt Cobain coming. I didn't see when Guns N' Roses came because they were kind of like a response to a lot of the, you know, hair metal bands, and they were like the Stones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like we had a lot of hair metal, maybe we had like Def Leppard, they were kind of like, oh, they're like our Zeppelin, you know, they're kind of trying to do it. And then GNR is like, wow, oh, they're actually doing it. Right. You know, and Yeah, so there's always going to be somebody comes along, you know, like another Pearl Jam or another Nirvana, Stone Temple Pilots or something like that. But yeah, I know in the underground, I'm always looking for them.
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure they're out there.
Yeah, I was telling you guys. At Texas Roller Coasters, you guys in that kind of space to me. But so I'm looking forward. Are you guys planning to try to, like, when things get back to a certain steady nature that you're going to continue?
Our lives are all over the place right now. And we're all kind of doing
your own thing
in individual stuff. But as soon as we, you know, get a grasp of the reins there a little bit, we'll be back to making music.
Yeah. Cause we've been doing a couple of things and I think I invited you, but I don't know if you're able to, but we started to do this thing called the PEG Bedroom Producer Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it in July and we actually had, because of the lockdowns, we did an online producer festival. We called it the PEG Bedroom Producer Festival. We did it from the 16th of July to the 18th. And podcast guests, we had 22 podcast guests that had been on the show, played 20, 30-minute sets from wherever they were.
Cool.
So if they were in their basement or in their garage or on a sound studio, depending where they were in the world, they did a performance. And so we're doing it again in February, from February 11th to the 13th. And we invite anybody who's been on the show. If you want to do like an unplugged show, if you want to do a video, we had some bands that just did videos and then sent us the video. And then some bands cool. actually played live from their bedroom studio, however they wanted to do it. And right we on. Did it. So like it's an open invitation. If you can find a way to do it, we actually rehearse everybody and show them what to do. But we just have a way to do that.
For this project, I didn't really write it in a way knowing that I would play it live. So I have no idea how I would do that. But I have been, you know, secretly doing some research to hopefully put some shows together and do a little something. I will let you know.
If you happen to be available, we are booking for that time period. It's a weekend, the 11th through the 13th is like a Friday to a Sunday.
For sure.
We're running from like 7 in the morning to 11 at night. And we've got it like almost half booked. But if you find a way that you could do some kind of cool live performance, and what we say, you know, people can kind of just do what they think is cool. You know, I kind of just do a jam. And I just, you know, that's what I do a lot.
That's kind of what I'm working on. I'm looking into a lot of like sampler stuff. And I was just thinking about like live remixing some of my songs, slapping them together.
Doing like some kind of controller to the kind of.
Looking at all sorts of sampler groove box things to see which one best fits.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool. Yeah, I mean, my Force kind of fits the bill. It does everything I've been wanting to do. It does what the MPC does, but then I can actually play it.
Yeah.
Given the kind of guy I am, I just don't want to run the clip. I actually want to.
Yeah, play. No, I want to perform, but also I don't want to hurt my pockets. So.
No. There's all kinds of cool machines out there that started showing up. I mean, I think even Roland brought their 707 back.
Yeah,
the MC-707, and you know, I'm not pushing anything, but that 707 was a cool machine back in the day. And the new version of it is pretty cool. But you know, there's NPCs, there's all kinds of controllers from everybody. Novation's got control. Everybody's got a controller.
I was looking at the Novation Circuit Rhythm.
That's a good machine. It's very similar to my Force. It's kind of like the same thing, but it's probably cheaper.
I have tons of friends who use the SP-404.
Yeah, and the new one came out. The brand new one, which is crazy. But the 404 is the standard. I've seen like Joji. If you ever seen Japanese artist Joji,
mm-hmm.
he uses the SP-404 real heavy.
Yeah. So that's kind of the place I'm looking for.
Yeah, he actually went to a club when he did an album release and used it to do like almost every song from his record live.
That's awesome.
He was, and I was like, I've never really used it. I understand how it works, mm-hmm. but it just is really cool to actually see him do it. And he was actually able to kind of DJ himself.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping to do.
Yeah, that is a cool thing. I love artists that do that because I think it's really interesting. Like because I'm a single, like one person operation.
It's tough doing it by yourself.
And I've kind of depended on sequencers.
Uh huh.
Like I'm heavily depending on like analog and digital sequencers and then foot pedals, and that's how I do what I do.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've never had like an all-in-one solution until I got this Force. But yeah, like what I used to do is just like control the clock for multiple things with like CV.
Sure.
And then kick things off with pedals. And right. I kind of just like forced it. But because I just like I wanted to do it, and I didn't have the money to do other things, so I took the equipment I had and kind of jury-rigged it to do what I wanted.
Yeah, yeah, it's gonna be me.
But I think it's cool if you do that. You then you end up with like your own workflow that's like you.
Sure.
You know, and then you're comfortable with it because you know how it works. And whether anybody else knows how to work, it doesn't matter. It's like as long as you can do it.
Right.
Yeah, that's my whole point. Is like, if you're comfortable with it, it doesn't matter if that's like not the standard thing. It's like, if it works for you, it works for you.
Absolutely.
Well, I really appreciate that you came on the show. I think it's interesting to see what you're doing today. I'm glad that you're still out here doing work and doing art, because like today, sometimes some of the people I've talked to in the past, they've not been able to continue, and it's awesome to see that you're still doing it.
Sure.
Yeah, and I think I told you, like, if any of the other guys in the band want to come on, like, I'm open to having everybody come do whatever.
Absolutely. Show. Absolutely. I'm sure you'll have us all back soon.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, yeah, thank you for being on the show. This will be out there on Spotify within, like, an hour or two. And we'll send you the YouTube and Facebook and Twitch links that are live. There'll be the permanent version so you can send it to your friends and stuff. And we could actually send you an MP3 and MP4 if you want to take cuts of this and promote it however you want.
That would be cool. Thank you.
We'll send it to your like WeTransfer type of thing. But
all right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. We'll definitely talk to you later. And anytime you have anything new that you're pushing, you know, always get in touch with us. We always like to stay in touch with the artists we talk to.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much. And Steven, Bob, make sure you hit the link, download, favorite, subscribe, playlist, do everything you can.
Please.
Bye.
How's it going?
Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. This is Josephine Electric, the lead singer of Phantom Electric Ghost. And so Newsly, it picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them back to you in a natural human voice. So for the first time in history on the net, the web becomes listenable. So they have, you can browse articles and topics and choose what you want to have start playing, stop scrolling, start listening. They also have podcasts as well as you can explore trending podcast from 40 countries. Our podcast, the Phantom Electric Ghost Show with Phantom, is over here too on Newsly. So download the Newsly app for free now at www.newsly.me. That's www.newsly.me. And use that link on the podcast. And you use promo code GHOST2021. That's GHOST2021. And receive one free month premium subscription. And when you're at it, listen to the Anchor podcast on Phantom Electric Ghost, where we interview independent artists from around the world. And you get to get a window behind the music of independent artists that you might not normally listen to. Thank you very much, and thank you for listening to Phantom Electric Ghost and Josephine Electric.